This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tabiri. A hurry-up-and-wait rotten apple of a week of politics here in Raleigh. Here to chat about it are Billy Ball of the Progressive NC Policy Watch and Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation. Good to see you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hello.
In the darkness of early Thursday morning, Apple announced it will bring 6,000 jobs and a new gleaming billion-dollar campus to Austin, Texas. The tech giant also plans to add 1,000 employees each in San Diego, Seattle, and Culver City, California. And still, New York, Pittsburgh, and Boulder, Colorado will see hundreds of new workers. North Carolina was left without a date to the ball. And this is the latest significant expansion, think Toyota, Amazon, Foxconn, that the state has missed out on. For levity, some smaller and still significant job expansion projects, think Honeywell, Advanced Auto Parts, and furniture maker Polywood, have all been announced in recent months. Why is it, though, as of now, that North Carolina cannot land a really big one?
You know, that's a really good question. In this case, we're reading a lot of tea leaves without a lot of answers. It's not like a company like Apple, when they make this announcement, is going to talk about all the things they didn't like about the other suitors. So we're left with a lot of questions. I think the natural reaction is some people are going to ask about incentives, although I think most of us agree that incentives are just a small piece of this puzzle. So a company of this size is going to consider many, many other factors, the education of the workforce, the infrastructure. They're going to consider all of these things when they're making these sorts of decisions. And I think in a company's case like Apple, too, I think they might consider political climate as well. We had reports some months back about Apple expressing some concern about the constitutional amendments and legislative overreach, and certainly back during the HB2 debacle, there was a very strong denunciation from Apple folks of North Carolina. So, you know, taking all of that together, we're still left with a lot of questions. But I think that we should also consider the political elements as well, and also the questions about our infrastructure, about our schools, about North Carolina's ability to be ready for this.
Jeff, I think there's a lot of focus on these big whales, if you will, these big deals that there's a lot of money promised and everything. And I agree with Billy. There's lots of factors that go into a decision that a company makes, and to second guess that or to try to continually position yourself so that you are at the top of the list for one company, I think is bad public policy. I think what we really need to focus on is continuing along the line of economic growth, of offering a really low tax rate across all businesses, to offer fewer regulations so that it allows businesses to grow and to come and to North Carolina. And what we're seeing, while these big guys get away, it gets a lot of press, a lot of media attention. You know, in the meantime, we've got hundreds and hundreds of jobs that are being created every day by North Carolina's small businesses that don't have their hand out, that aren't looking for an incentive package, that are happy to be here in North Carolina and creating jobs. And that's where most of the jobs in North Carolina are. And so I just think it's sort of a fool's game to continue to go after the big dog when you miss all the dogs that are running all across North Carolina.
So I am listening to you. I'm still going to ask that silver bullet question. What is it they can do to get over the proverbial hump, if it is only a proverbial hump in front of them, from a legislative or executive standpoint, or perhaps something else?
Well, I mean, that's the, you know, I don't know, you know, the million-dollar question of, you know, how do you get these? There was a lot of consternation and a lot of surprise expressed when Apple made the decision not to come to North Carolina. I think that, you know, slow and steady and, you know, as I mentioned, low tax rate, fewer regulations, the right investments in education, providing infrastructure so whatever the company is, they can get their goods and services across North Carolina, across the state line. And then the natural resources that we have, and then also the right investments in education, and really focusing on a well-prepared workforce so that as companies come in, they're hiring North Carolinians. They're not coming in, taking advantage of an incentive package and bringing workers from other states. I think we're doing the right thing. I just think we need to do more of it, and I'd like to see less emphasis on trying to snag these big kind of flashy efforts that are out there, and really focus on, you know, day-to-day, slow and steady. Government's job is to provide an environment where businesses can come and grow.
From my perspective, you know, earlier I mentioned education and infrastructure. I think that a company like Apple, which is so invested in education, is going to pay a lot of attention to it when they hear a lot of criticisms of the state's leadership about funding for education, about how it's preparing their students, when they hear about a public school system that has $8 billion in unmet infrastructure needs. I think a company like Apple that is so invested in this is going to pay attention. Again, that's I can't obviously put words in Tim Cook's mouth, but I think that there's a lot to be said for offering a full picture, not just the types of things that Becky is talking about, but offering the preparation for the future employees of this company. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if Apple noticed the thousands and thousands of teachers marching on the Capitol to criticize this legislature. I'm certain they noticed that.
As we sat down today, Billy, you made reference to the fact that there might now be 100 twists and turns in the 9th congressional controversy. This is the election fraud saga that is being investigated, playing out in the area from Charlotte over to Fayetteville. There are expanding questions. There are now some questions about Columbus County. What is your biggest takeaway from this week in the ever-evolving saga of the 9th congressional?
Well, the picture is changing almost by the hour. We're getting more information. First of all, kudos to the Board of Elections, to everybody involved in this. I mean, the governor's office, the General Assembly, local officials, on really delving into this and seeing that there's a problem and really going after it. I think that everyone is appalled at the election fraud that allegedly, you know, we're seeing unfold. And, you know, it's been great to see something that everybody can agree on. Where we go with this now, and there's kind of two things. There's the question about the election and what we're going to do about that, and it does, we'll see as the investigation continues and the direction that the State Board of Elections, now authorized by the General Assembly, wants to go as far as whether to have a primary or how that's really going to work. But the other piece of this, too, is what kind of criminal activity has happened and who is responsible and who knew what, when, and those kind of things. So this is an ongoing story. We haven't heard the last of it, but kudos to everyone involved. It's looking like this goes back to at least 2010. This is not the responsibility or the fault of any one party, or I don't think even one candidate. And so this is an investigation that needs to be done, and good for everyone that is involved in it that they're proceeding with this.
I'm not sure that I'm ready to say that it's not the fault of one party, but I mean, in this case, we are aware of these issues dating back some number of years, but they are strictly concerning a Republican consultant. But that said, these sorts of stories, we are going to have to backtrack and, as Becky mentioned, try to find out who knew what and when. And, you know, if this is an issue that went back so many years, the natural question we have to ask is, how are we just finding out about it now? How are we just trying to resolve these issues now? I mean, there were some of these issues on the table back during the election between McCrory and Cooper. And obviously there were concerns from Robert Pittenger about the handling of this during the primary. I think eventually we're going to end up turning around and looking at the state and finding out how did we investigate these things when they came up during the McCrory-Cooper election and during the Pittenger primary. What did we do then? And what didn't we do is probably a better question. If we're coming to this day right now and it's come to a head to such a point where we have such a mess that we have to call another election, it's pretty embarrassing for North Carolina.
It's very embarrassing. I also think this is a really good argument for transparency and how we've seen it. And I think the trend and the expectation from the public and also a commitment from lawmakers and decision makers at all levels of government is more and more transparency. And I think this is a great example of this is what happens and you uncover these things that what we're learning has been going on for years because there's an insistence on transparency and getting to the bottom of things. And I think that's a very good thing and a very good direction for North Carolina to go in.
In our final couple of moments, on Wednesday, a jury in Sampson County ruled in favor of 8 neighbors who sued the world's largest pork producer for nuisance violations. Think noises and smells. Each plaintiff will be awarded between $100 and $75,000 in compensatory damages. Who is the biggest winner in this ruling?
You know, it's interesting because while the pork producers lost this case, technically, in terms of the damages, Obviously, we're dealing with far lower numbers of damages in this case than the numbers that we saw in the previous three cases, nearly $500 million in those earlier cases. And we saw the judge, Judge Faber, who tossed out any consideration of punitive damages. So we're seeing a difference in how these cases are being heard. And it's my understanding Judge Faber will hear another case, and then it'll return to Judge Britt, who pork producers had a lot of or considered a lot more sympathetic to the plaintiffs in these cases. So, you know, in terms of who won this case, I think that's a mixed question. I don't think the pork producers are coming out of this loss hurting like they were financially from those earlier cases.
And both parties are claiming that this was good for them. I think the significance of this is that there, as Billy mentioned, there are considerably lower damages that have been awarded with this case. Does this change the trajectory of these nuisance cases, the responsibility that the large pork producers may be held with? You know, does this signify a change? Something else, too, that that I've learned recently is the nation is watching these cases. And there are, if not hog producers, there are cattle farmers, there are poultry farmers across the country that are watching this to see how this is going to play out and how North Carolina's laws are structured and then how the courts interpret those laws is something that's growing national interest. And the concern is that when you have these very large rewards, that it encourages these kind of lawsuits. And there's a real concern in the farming community of the impact that this is going to have on farmers, small farmers. Where are we going to get our food if the farmers are put out of business by these things? And what is the, and again, but you know, what, and what is their responsibility as neighbors and corporate community members? So some real important issues here. And I think the significance, again, of the case this week is it may have turned the tide a little bit on these large awards. And there's still plenty of those cases out there. So we'll see where this goes. But this, again, the nation is watching North Carolina to see how we handle this.
Billy Ball is managing director at NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.